This month, we have already had two heat stretches in Connecticut, as well as hazy, smoky skies tied to the Canadian wildfires. But besides the impact it had on whether or not we should go outside, the weather events also had a huge impact on our trains, planes, and automobiles. That's worth remembering. And thankfully, we've got Jim Cameron of Talking Transportation to do the remembering for us. He joins us back on the show. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm good, Melissa, and yourself.
I am doing well. Thank you so much. I love this article. First of all, the title alone, Hot and Bothered. Absolutely fabulous. I love it. Tell us a little bit, and I don't know how you want to break this down, Jim, so I'm going to kind of follow your lead on this one. If you want to start with kind of the smoke or the heat or a combo, or if you want to start with which modes of transportation had what impact. I know your article started with the wildfire smoke and what that meant for travel disruptions.
Yeah, and you know, we have short memory about some of this stuff because it was just a couple of years ago that the skies turned an equally frightening green and orange because of wildfire smoke from Canada. And it happened again last week, and it's probably going to happen again.
Mm.
So, you know, the question is, how do you prepare for something like that? Well, obviously, if you're in your car, you got to slow down a little bit. It's like trying to drive through fog. Your headlights should be on low. They should not be on high beam because that just obscures everything in front of you. But more importantly, if you're in dangerous, you know, unhealthy air, you should turn your air conditioning system on, close all your windows, but set the air conditioning to recirculate. If it's not set to recirculate, doing just what the word implies, it's going to be bringing in bad air from outside. So you got to just be in a little bubble and drive safely. Keep your lights on low and, you know, be cautious. So common sense kind of stuff. But although we're not really used to driving in those kind of conditions, but, you know, history repeats itself. And I think we'll probably see more of that. There's a lot of Canada up there, 2 million acres of arboreal forest, which can catch fire. And despite what the president thinks, there's no nation that has the firefighting equipment to put all that stuff out.
Right. I mean, and honestly, we had this conversation, you know, following the most recent wildfire impact on Connecticut, that it wasn't that long ago that we had a brush fire that continued in on Lamentation Mountain couple falls ago here in Connecticut, and we drained our resources. I mean, it was several weeks to attack that, which was, again, a campfire that wasn't put out properly. So human error.
Yeah.
And we had drained every fire department basically in Connecticut. We called on, I'll never forget, we called on New York. We called on our surrounding states. We called out west. We did call on Canada, and everyone came to help us with that. So to your point, Jim, I do think that we're always going to have this issue of whether it's wildfires, brush fires, you know, even tropical storms. I mean, we're always going to deal with weather all over the world. And unfortunately, a lot of times we are going to see an impact of it in some way, shape or form. But interestingly enough, Jim, when you bring up how to handle the smoky air with the car, I didn't really think about, which is silly, honestly, the more I think about it, what do they do with airplanes? Like, how do they handle that? Because they're literally in it. They are directly in it. Or do they fly above it? I don't know. But how do you do the whole circulating with the air and all of that to keep people cool on the plane?
Well, the jets themselves obviously have a lot of filters and air processing equipment. And, you know, depending on what their flight plan is, they try to get up above the pollution and the smoke as quickly as they can up into the clean air areas as well, too. The problem in aviation is one of, because visibility is reduced, the air traffic controllers have to widen the space between planes. That means there's a little more room for each of the planes to be able to land should anything happen and they lose more visibility. And that just, you know, adds up to, you know, more flight delays. The other problem, and, you know, we haven't really addressed it, is heat, because the heat waves that the nation is enduring and will see in greater number in going forward have tremendous effect. For example, at Phoenix, which is obviously a pretty hot city to begin with, if the temperature outside on the tarmac reaches 120 degrees, a lot of those planes can't fly. I mean, the air is just too thin. If you go up to a place like Denver, which is higher in altitude and the air is thinner still, there are planes that can't fly in that kind of heat because it is not giving the resistance to the wings to get them airborne. And then we got the trains. I mean, obviously, I focus a lot on the trains, and we don't think about it a lot, but heat has a huge impact on the operation of the railroads, partly because we've changed the way we use the tracks. In the old days, tracks were about 39 feet in length, and they were connected to each other, and between each of those tracks was a gap. And that's why when you were driving over the rail tracks, you know, there was this clickety-clack, 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 as the wheels went over each one of those gaps. Well, now they use much longer, 1,800 feet of welded rail.
Wow.
And between each of those pieces, there is a gap. But the rail can get so hot. I mean, if the outdoor temperature is about 100 degrees, the steel tracks themselves can be as high as 140 degrees. And as we know from high school physics, when you heat things up, they expand. So those tracks can expand and literally pop out of their holders on the railroad ties and create what they call sun kinks, so that the railroad, even though it's supposed to be a straight track,
it gets out of alignment.
Wavy,
oh my gosh.
Out of alignment. Yeah, and
that's
when a
crazy
train is moving along, if the track is out of alignment or is, you know, has one of these sun kinks, that's a derailment that's going to happen right there. So they're very cautious in those kind of temperatures. There are some railroads in Germany that are even experimenting with painting their tracks white in the summertime to not absorb as much heat as well, too.
We are talking transportation with none other than Jim Cameron of Talking Transportation, and we are going to link his article in CT Mirror to our website, voiceofct.com. You know, it's interesting, Jim, as you were talking about this, I didn't realize that about the tracks. Wasn't there a situation that, and maybe that wasn't the tracks, maybe this was more of the heat and impacting the wires? Didn't we have a situation where the heat directly impacted trains in Fairfield County?
Oh, it was a horrible situation, and your memory is as good as mine about that one. The you know, we talked about the tracks and how they expand and how they get hot, but, you know, the wire overhead, which is known as the catenary, that's where the electricity comes to run the trains. Those wires are made of metal, and when it gets hot, they tend to sag. So instead of being like a straight line of wire, that the pantograph, that triangular thing that reaches up from the top of the train to get the electricity, can reach and run along smoothly, they hit a bump in the wire. And if the catenary is sagging, the pantograph, that gizmo on the top of the train, can grab the wire and rip it down. So yes, back in 2011, there was an incident with the older cars, not the ones that we have now, the older cars. They had problems. Hot day. I remember being in the New York City that day, and the pavement temperature was something like 147 degrees.
Oh my God. So
the train was moving along near Westport, and it grabbed the wire, pulled the wire down. The train stopped. There was no electricity. The hottest day of the year. These passengers are trapped on a train with no windows that open, no AC whatsoever. And after about a half hour, feeling that the railroad was doing nothing to rescue them, they called 911, and the Westport Fire Department and EMS showed up, helped rescue people off the train, and everyone was okay, a little hot. You know, they needed to get some water on it, you know, into their systems. So the long and the short of it was, those old cars are gone. The new cars are a little more reliable. They're rebuilding the catenary system, so it's what they say is constant tension, which means they don't sag, they don't stretch. But for the passenger's point of view, one of the good things that resulted from that was there are now emergency water supplies on each train.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that.
If a stranding happens like that, yeah, you won't see them. They're sort of hidden away on a rack, and you're not supposed to touch them until they're
it's an emergency.
Dispensed by conductors in
sure.
an emergency. But there is water on board.
Hmm.
So, BYO, bring your own water as well, too. I mean, when I'm traveling, I always make sure I have a bottle of water. Doesn't have to be one of those fancy Stanley cups, if you want to carry that around to your yoga class, be my guest. But bring a bottle of water with you, because you never can tell where you might be, where you might get stranded because of the weather. We're in a condition where these kind of weather situations are going to repeat themselves. They're only getting worse.
Mm.
Paul Pioric, you know, listen to the weather forecast today. These storms are getting nasty and more frequent. So we're going to see more of this until we do something about what we've done to poison our environment.
Mm. Well, and it's interesting, Jim, that you had mentioned earlier in this talk about how the heat can actually lead to cancellation of flights because of how hot the runways get and all of that. Do you see that impact on our roads going back to kind of driving? Do you ever see the heat impact the roads or anything kind of like concrete? Can it buckle or anything like that?
Oh, good heavens. Yeah, I was watching a video last night, I think from Indiana, where they had a roadway that was made of concrete. And the concrete expanded. And because it was in sections, almost like the railroad used to be with 39-foot gaps, the roadway actually buckled up, and it created what looked like almost like a ski jump. So cars were driving along. It was a hot day. They didn't realize the road had buckled, and they were driving over these things and being launched into the air. When those sort of situations happen, I think they're a little more rare perhaps in Connecticut than in other parts of the country. But you've got to be very careful. You've got to slow down. You've got to assume the worst and prepare for that, and then hope for the best as well, too. So your car, I mean, it's not immune to the heat, even though the air conditioning seems to be working. The tire pressure can increase as the temperature goes up, and that will perhaps either weaken the structure of the tire itself, increase the risk of blowouts. But it's your car's cooling system that's really working overtime, because it's working hard to keep the engine cool, to run the AC as well, too. So be sensitive to that. Prepare your car. When you're going on a road trip, go and check the filters, the air filters in the car that we started talking about as well, too. They've got to be kept clean, so that if you're in a situation where you've got to go into recirculation mode as opposed to bringing fresh air or funky air in from the outside, those air filters will work and keep you safe.
Yeah, and it honestly is a lot easier than some people may think. I am not about to pretend like I understand the ins and outs of my car. I appreciate it and I love it, but I am not about to act like I am some kind of car expert. But every time I go to get my oil changed, and I just go to one of those like stop in, stop out kind of thing to just have that checked and whatever, I always have them check my filter for exactly this reason, Jim, whether it is because of the weather or we just don't really think about it. We use it constantly and we don't think about how much it's working overtime in especially Connecticut, where we have four seasons and we have pollen and we have all these other things that happen in our atmosphere besides just, you know, when we have smoky air, so to always check that filter, I think, is just a good habit to get into. I had never really done it until I had a kid. For some reason, I now value my husband and I breathing better ever since we had our 8-year-old. But, checking the filter, and what's amazing is I will sometimes have to change out my filter twice in a year, just depending on whatever's in the atmosphere. There was one year in particular where we had a lot of pollen and just a lot, it felt like. I don't remember. It was recent. But I had to change my filter twice that year because it just was working overtime. And so it's just a good habit to get into. So, Jim Cameron, always love talking transportation with you. And as I mentioned, I will have a link to your most recent article, Hot and Bothered, on our website, voiceofct.com. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.